This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Libby Brody. How are you, Libby?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me here today.
Not a problem. We're going to be talking about wines of Lisboa, which is a wine region in Portugal, but you're one of their brand ambassadors for them.
Yes, I think I am, actually. I'm honoured to say. I went and did some filming over there and just absolutely adored the place and the wines, and I've sort of stuck with them ever since.
Cool. Just a bit about yourself, though, Libby, just to get some details about you. I know you've got a YouTube channel, you write, you're a columnist. Do you want to just tell us a bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So I sort of fell into wine over lockdown when my actual profession ended overnight. I was a theatre producer, and all live events were cancelled. So all my shows across the world were closed immediately, which was a bit of a shame given 15 years of work on that. However, there was one other thing that I knew a bit about and enjoyed to do, and that's drink. So I took my WSETs, absolutely fell in love with it, adored the product, adored the people I met. And there's so much about wine that I think is so compelling when you look at travel and culture and people and the generous spirit that often comes with wine. So I got into that hardcore. I started my own consultancy, believing that I was going to deliver wines, and quickly actually ended up writing about wines, speaking about wines, hosting events, and here I am today.
Lovely. The column you write for is the City AM, isn't it?
Yes, I have 2 pages a week in City AM. That makes us the biggest wine newspaper in the UK.
That's because it's circulated in London. It's a London financial paper, really.
It is. It is the most, I think it's the most widely read business and finance paper in London. But we also are online and have an app. So it is a national press, really. But I write for anyone who pays me, to be honest. So I've written for Condé Nast, Cosmopolitan, The Independent, The Eye, a whole bunch of papers.
Okay. I know you're quite a storyteller when you're talking about wines, but we're going to spend today, we're going to do 2 podcasts with you. And today we're just going to dive into Lisboa and find out about Lisboa a little bit. And some of the ideas behind what's going on there. So first of all, where is Lisboa?
So the wine route of Lisboa is just north of the city of Lisbon, and it's about 130 kilometres north on quite a sort of funny little narrow but long strip, about 10,000 hectares of vines there. And it's banked by the Atlantic Ocean and that coast, and then these hills and mountains on the other side. So if you go to Lisbon, an absolutely stunningly beautiful city, you can be in vineyards within 10-15 minutes up and down this coastal region.
For some of you guys who have never heard of Lisboa, it is, I understand, the biggest or often the biggest wine-producing region in Portugal.
It is, and I don't think that enough people know about the variety and the incredible wines that they have there. Obviously, a lot of it is drunk in the region itself, always a good sign, but we have some fantastic examples in the UK too.
It was actually originally, because I think when I did my WSET courses a long time ago, it was actually called Estremadura.
I will believe you.
Yeah, I was doing a little bit of research, just getting ready for it, and I found out it changed its name in 2009. I think it was to do with because they wanted to tie it in with the town of Lisbon, so it had more of a sort of centre, I think. And also there's a region in Spain, I think it's called Extremadura or something like that. And it's a little bit confusing, so I think that's the reason why they did it.
They want to differentiate themselves. Understandable.
Yeah.
Wine can already be confusing enough.
Yeah, and Lisbon's quite a well-known capital. You know, it's the capital of Portugal. So, I mean, Lisboa, Lisbon, it sounds more sensible, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
You said that it's in Portugal, it's mainly hitting north, isn't it, of Lisbon, and it's a big coastal strip. 130 kilometres, that's a long, long wine region, isn't it?
It's really long, but as I said, it's sort of quite narrow as well, which is so important for everything about the wines I'm sure we'll discuss in a bit.
Well, let's start with climate, because I always think climate is the starting point of any wine region. If you understand the climate, you understand the grapes. If you understand the grapes and the climate, then you understand the styles of wine they can produce.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a little bit of research, and It sort of said that the climate was Mediterranean, which is strange because it's on that Atlantic coast, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I think that Mediterranean is a sort of a catch-all, really, when people think of certain areas of Europe. They go, it's Mediterranean. But actually, a lot of people I spoke to when I was there were quite adamant that it is not a Mediterranean, it's an Atlantic coast. It's an Atlantic diet. They talk about not Mediterranean diet. And it's the Atlantic influence that is so key and so vital in this region. It is the thing that everybody talks about, and it completely governs the styles of wine they produce.
I think the thing that makes it Mediterranean is that it has quite dry summers, because normally an Atlantic climate, a maritime climate, is wet all year round. And if you head a bit further north up into Rhea Spatius, Alberino Rhea Spatius, it gets 1.5 meters of rain, and that's all year round. It's just like, it's just buckets. Vina Verde is the same thing, it's just buckets. Whereas,
I mean, I actually went to Rhea Spatius and we had this beautifully sunny few days there, and I was told this is very, very unusual. Yeah. And it's normally full of rain. So I was very lucky in that particular regard. I mean, I guess not to see the actual terroir as it should be, but it was beautifully sunny when we were there. But yeah, no, absolutely. This sort of is a very dry summer, very hot, lots of sunshine there, which is wonderful. But we think the when I'm talking about sort of the climate is Mediterranean, but the Atlantic is absolutely key.
Yeah, yeah. How does the Atlantic influence the
region?
Well,
it's got these tremendous waves. Anyone who's a surfer should absolutely go. I do not surf at all.
I used to surf before I came to the UK.
Give it a go. Go there and give it. Maybe
I've
still got my
wetsuit. I've got my wetsuit, but my board is left. I left at home when I moved here.
I'm pretty sure you can get one year in, year out there, because it is such a mecca for it. It's one of the best surfing destinations in the world. And that's because of these amazing winds and these huge waves that come in. And these cooling sea breezes, they get pushed inland. And as I said before, it's quite narrow, so it's not like a long way to travel, really. They get pushed inland. And what they do is they therefore push the humidity off the vines, because it is quite a warm climate there. And they push that off the vines. And the grapes, therefore, they retain this wonderful, vibrant freshness. And a theme that you taste in maybe not every single wine, but in a lot of the wines, is this sort of salty lick, the salinity that runs through that. And they always have this sort of fresh, vibrant, beautiful, fine acidity to them, the reds and the whites and the rosés, because I think we're trying a whole bunch of them. And so that is one of the absolutely key influences. And then obviously you've got the altitude as well, which is a feature. It's not that the highest wine region at all, but it's got these beautiful rolling hills and what sort of some mountains as well that protect the vines and keep that wind going through them. And, you know, obviously altitude helps with the drainage of the soils, everything as
and
well.
And coolness as well,
as well, to help those grapes with their slower ripening and to retain that acidity within them. So that's quite an important sort of a microclimate that is governed by mainly the Atlantic influence and also that altitude.
Yeah. If you go a little bit further south into Altajou and Altajanu, some of it's got a little bit of that coastal influence, but a lot of it is further inland.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the closest you've got is Bahihada. I think that's the right pronunciation, Bahihada. Yeah, I'm hopeless.
I mean, sure. Again, I would like to say if there's anyone, anyone Portuguese listening to this, and they probably will be, I'm so sorry for my pronunciations that might be happening across this podcast.
Bahiado, again, isn't right on the coast, though, and I think it's got a little bit of distance from the coast. And when you go further north, you're getting into Vino Verde.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Vino Verde is now right on the other side of Rhea Spatius, so you're getting all that rain again. Although, we're going to talk about the wines later on, but I understand you, in Lisboa they make a very similar style of wine to Vino Verde, low alcohol, slightly sparkling.
Yes, I think it's pronounced Leve.
Yeah.
And it's something they're really proud they're doing, this white wine that is lower in alcohol. And I think it's one of the great things about this region that not many people are aware of, is that it's actually quite trendy. They're quite up to the minute. People sort of have this idea maybe that Portuguese wines are a certain thing, but the wines of Lisboa, they're quite funky and cool. They've got that low alcohol thing going on. They've certified pet nats. So it's very sort of, you know, the new wave of drinking, things that are on trend right now. And I think it's quite important that a lot of the winemakers there are quite young. There are a lot of independent, smaller growers that are coming to the fore. And although it's a very historical winemaking region, hundreds and hundreds of years of winemaking, they're regenerating their vineyards, their historical vineyards, but with slightly more modern techniques and winemaking techniques and practices, and creating, I would say, more modern consumer-friendly wines.
So we've talked about the climate. We've got an idea that it's dry in summer, which is quite important, particularly for some of the organic producers. Disease pressure, always a pain for organic guys. If it's a little bit drier, not too bad. The other thing that's I read about, and I'm sure you'll tell me about, is the soils, because I understand that there's two main types of soils, really.
Mm-hmm. They're mainly clay and limestone, so quite good for drainage. And I believe it is the largest alkaline soils region in Portugal. And that obviously plays a part in the wines as well. And of course, they have the Colares PDO, which is one of the most exciting things about the Lisboa wine region, because they have these sandy soils, which is different. You've got the clay and limestone further inland, but the sandy soils, what they did is they protected those vines from phylloxera. And so you have these really old vines there, and they're quite remarkable when you actually see them, because they're growing out of the sand, and that's obviously very hot. Despite that amazing wind coming off the sea, it's very hot in the sand. So what they do is they sort of let them run kind of free, but they prop them up with these tiny little splints, these sticks, to keep them off, you know, the heat of the sand.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because it's like when you're walking on a hot, sandy beach, isn't it? You burn your toes.
Exactly that. And I've never seen vines growing sort of on a beach or on the sand in that way before. So that's quite remarkable and very different, and makes these beautiful old vines. You know, they have some of the oldest vines around ever because they avoided phylloxera.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. And phylloxera it's well known to not like sand. Mm. It just does not thrive in sandy conditions. So that is one of the nice things about that. So do you know how old some of the vines are?
I'm afraid I don't. I have no idea about the actual age of the vines, but I would imagine hundreds of years. Do you know?
No, I do not know. I don't know if they're the original phylloxera, 200 years, but they won't be, because the yield would have dropped off too much. But interesting. So do you know if they plant? I suppose they could plant on their own rootstocks, which is something you don't see a lot of these days.
No, I mean, as far as I know, you don't.
All right. And then the other thing you mentioned was clay and limestone, which is a nice combination, isn't it? Because when you've got alkaline soils, it tends to big up the acidity in the wines. So that gives you that freshness as well. But also clay. I'm quite a fan of clay soils because they give a richness to the wines. You just get a little bit more oomph to it. So on the one hand, you've got the alkaline giving you a little bit more acidity, mm-hmm. a little bit more backbone, and then you've got the clay giving you a little bit more richness in the wines as well. So clay limestone is quite a nice
balance.
Nice combination. Especially in a warm climate or a warmer climate like Lisbon or Lisboa, mm-hmm. as the region is, because I think that little bit of extra acidity, holding on to your acidity, is always the trick, isn't it?
Well, I think a lot of people have a misconception of wines from a warmer country, as you say, or countries around sort of Portugal itself, as being these sort of like big, bold, almost brash flavours that come through. They think of them as boozy and hot. And that is kind of what surprised me most when trying all these wines here. That lightness of touch, that acidity and brightness that is so desirable in wines these days, actually, is where everyone wants to buy their wines, what they want to be drinking. And I think that that is something that is quite precious about this region and something that needs to be explored further.
Okay, so we've talked about the climate, talked about the soils, and I think the soils, because I think the most important thing with soils isn't so much that you've got this particular soil or this particular soil. I think it's the most important thing about soils is making sure the soil is appropriate for the climate.
Mm-hmm.
So in Bordeaux, gravel's quite good because they're trying to grow Cabernet Sauvignon and it ripens, but struggles to ripen. So gravel gives you that, and it's also wet, so gravel gives you your drainage. So gravel's great in Bordeaux, whereas gravel in a high environment that's quite dry is a terrible soil type. So having clay, which holds on to water, limestone holds on to water as well. Sand, though, I don't know about you, but I always find sandy soils tends to produce lighter styles of wines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever noticed that before.
No, I have to say I am no soil expert. In fact, my editor once told me that if I ever mentioned soil, he'd fire me. So when I am tasting wines in general, apart from the very basics, I do not really write about that.
Okay. And let's talk about some of the grape varieties that you get in the region.
Yes. So one of my favorites, which I sort of discovered when I was out there, I love Arinto and I loved Vital, and they're both white grape varietals. And as you referred to just then about the soils, this balance that they both have, where you have this wonderful roundness and generosity on the palate, but this beautiful salinity and freshness in them both. And we tried these quite young, we tried them aged, and as I believe we'll be trying a bit later, the Arinto as a fortified wine as well. So they are quite versatile white wines, but those are stunning. And then we have obviously a heap of red wines. I really like Bastardo, mainly because I just like saying that. I feel like it's okay to say that. But yes, we've got a whole bunch of others, and I'm sure you know a bunch more.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's quite a few from Portugal. Touriga Nacional, it's obviously the big one. Do you see any Touriga Nacional in Lisbon?
Yes, absolutely did. I mean, most of the wines that we tended to try, particularly the reds, actually were blends. Yeah. They do a lot of red blends, but yeah, that was a dominant one.
Touriga Nacional. Tintoroes, which is your Tempranillo. Mm-hmm. Again, another red grape variety. There's Alicante Boucher.
You said that beautifully. You did. That sounded beautiful to me.
Not until you hear Jane say it.
There's the Castelleo, which is actually quite a finely structured, lighter style of red. Again, not something I think many people would think of when they think of Portuguese wines, but that's a really beautiful red varietal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've actually tried some wines. Well, I tried some wines. We're going to try some wines next week. And we're going to talk about food and wine matching and sort of some of the thing cuisines mm-hmm. that you get in Portugal. So we'll talk about some of the wines more specifically then.
Having travelled to many wine regions, there is something I think we're seeing a lot more of, and I think it's absolutely brilliant, which is a focus on indigenous varietals and local grapes. Now, obviously, there are international grapes that are grown everywhere, and that is wonderful. But I think something that is really changing in the world of wine is that winemakers are focusing on what makes their particular area significant and special and differentiates themselves, rather than going after we all want to be Burgundy. And I think that this is something that is very key in this region, where they are focusing so much more on their indigenous varietals. There's a lot more sustainable, organic winemaking. Again, something you're seeing across the world, which is really important. People appreciating the planet and what they're growing and the effects it has on those wines. And I think it is all about honoring their heritage and history while experimenting with things, you know, like the concrete eggs and winemaking techniques that aren't traditionally from that region, but are things that the younger winemakers want to experiment with more and more.
And one last thing I'll say before we close up, which is something I never normally comment about, labels. I had a look at a load of different labels from Lisboa. Mm-hmm. We've got a red wine here, actually. And if you look at the label, it is... There's a lot of references to Lisbon on the labels. You'll mm-hmm. see a lot. Like there's a wine, I think it's called Port 6, that you see in the supermarkets. Yes. And it seems to be like an urban picture of Lisbon. Mm-hmm. But it's all very colourful, and it's not your classic labelling. It's not got critters on it like you see from Australia mm-hmm. Or anything like that. They're all very bright, and it's almost like someone's made a quilt quite often, because they're almost bitsy and choppy and changey. Mm-hmm. It's almost like about one in five wines from Lisboa has this particular style on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did you notice anything like that?
I think that in the city itself, there's such an emphasis on architecture and art, and it is quite a bold city, I would say, colour-wise, architecturally-wise. I think what many of them are trying to do is carry that through in their labelling to, again, sort of retain that sense of place and the actual heritage of where it's coming from. And I think that's quite important to them all.
Yeah. Okay, then I think we'll wrap it up there, Libby. Cheers.
Thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you.